In this half hour, a member of the younger generation who believes in crusades. Sports comment by Joe Garagiola and selected Monitor music. Like this latest from Pep Clark, One in a Million.
Now that I've won your love, I'll never feel the way. So where one day you'll have to go, because I want you to stay. I've waited far too long.
Searches for and reports on every facet of the younger generation. This time, she questions a young man who took on a summer job that may be bigger than both of them, and may be bigger than you and me, too.
This summer, for the first time, Ralph Nader has some help in his battle against bureaucracies and corporations. 16 young people have been helping him, doing research and investigation on some of his projects. One of these is John Schultz from Chicago, Illinois, who at 29 is a graduate of Yale Law School, a teacher at a boys' preparatory school, and this fall will teach law at the University of Southern California Law School. John, what specifically have you been doing for Ralph Nader?
Well, I've been in charge of a project, including six or eight of the young people, studying the Federal Trade Commission.
Now, how did you get involved with Ralph Nader?
Well, I had heard about him in the press over the last couple of years, and I felt some sort of affinity, so I think, perhaps rather naively, I wrote a letter to him last fall, sort of off the top of my heart, and I got no response. However, in March of the spring, I did hear from an associate of Mr. Nader's who asked me if I wanted to take part in a project. I said that I did, and then Mr. Nader called me from Washington. I was in New Haven, and told me about it.
And you're all volunteer, aren't you, all 16 of you?
Yes, we are, although I myself have a grant of $500 from Yale University, because part of my work is going to turn out as a project for the Yale Law Journal.
Why do you want to do this kind of thing? I mean, do you think it accomplishes something more than ordinary work in the government would accomplish?
I think it definitely does. My impression of government and even private bureaucracy is that it tends to get fairly settled and inactive, and that it needs some sort of outside prodding.
What do you think he's trying to accomplish?
I think he's generally interested in improving communication between government and private bureaucracies, which are very large, and individual citizens, with a view to solving certain problems in the behavior of government and business, which can harm those citizens.
John, a summer is such a short time. Do you think that you've accomplished anything?
Oh, yes. This project, we hope, will actually continue a bit into the fall. That is, it'll end up in the fall, and I have the impression that with a report that we'll be doing on the Federal Trade Commission to be presented to the press and eventually to Congress, that some significant changes may come in the behavior of that agency.
And what do you think has been the most valuable part of all of this for you?
Well, for me, there are two things. The opportunity that I've had to work with Mr. Nader and to see in detail how he operates and to get to know him. The other thing is for me to be working in an area where it's possible to do something in the way of constructive criticism of this society. I love my country, and yet I always think I see things wrong with it. And this experience lets me do something about the things I think are wrong with the country rather than just sit around and complain, which I've often done too much in the past.
Thank you, John. We've been talking with John Schultz. This is Linda Sutter reporting for This Younger Generation on Monitor.
A big job. But I think we've begun to notice that this younger generation is a generation that thinks big. Harper's Bazaar, Battle of New Orleans. Now a word about another kind of campaign.
This period in which we're entering, I think we will have the greatest opportunity for world peace, but also face the greatest danger of world war of any time in our history. I believe we must have peace. I believe that we can have peace, but I do not underestimate the difficulty of this task. Because, you see, the art of preserving peace is greater than that of waging war and much more demanding. But I am proud to have served in an administration which ended one war and kept the nation out of other wars for 8 years. And it is that kind of experience and it's that kind of leadership that America needs today and that we will give to America with your help.
Who's the one who can provide the leadership America needs? Nixon's the one. The preceding political announcement was paid for by United Citizens for Nixon Agnew.
Ted Steele here at 18 minutes after the hour, and you're on the Monitor Beacon.
Not all Americans share this nation's promise. Hundreds of thousands of citizens are victims of the city ghettos. Their hope lies with you. They can help themselves if you point the way to educational and economic opportunities. Please send a contribution to Community Development Foundation, 345 East 46th Street, New York, New York, 10017. That address again is Community Development Foundation, 345 East 46th Street, New York, New York, 10017.
Sports page, front page, entertainment page. The Bill Mazur Show turns from one main event of the day to another. This is Bill Mazur inviting you to join me as the men who are news make news on my program. Weekdays from 4 to 7 p.m. on WNBC Radio.
Monitor New York. WNBC New York.
Monitor Music presents Mingo, loyal Indian friend of Daniel Boone, and now recording under the name of Ed Ames.
There'll be another song for me.
Of my life. Hey, you want to hear about the love of a certain lady's life?
Tell me, sir, how much is that beautiful javelin?
I'm afraid I can't tell you.
You're kidding. How do you expect to sell cars if you won't tell people the price?
Well, let me explain. Only the price of this specially equipped javelin is a secret. If you guess it, you can win a javelin free. It's all part of the American Motors Dealers Smart Buyers Convention, where you can now save a ton of money on any American Motors car.
I think I love you.
Licensed drivers 18 and over eligible, no purchase necessary, void where prohibited. Now, Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports. Joe has some words of caution for those intrepid football players who choose to be a professional quarterback. A guy could get hurt that way.
There's a big difference between the intra-squad games that the professional football teams have been playing and the exhibition games that they've been playing against other pro teams. In the intra-squad games, the instructions are very simple. Don't rough the quarterback. In the other games, there are no instructions like that, and the results are pretty obvious. The quarterback casualty list already this year is impressive. Some injuries are more serious than others, and some are more important than others. A good example of both is the loss of the Philadelphia Eagles of Norm Snead. Snead suffered a broken leg and will be lost for most of the season. The Eagles have two other quarterbacks, King Hill and John Hewitt. Hill is more experienced, but he's also out of shape. He admits that he's fat. Another key loss has been caused by a knee injury to John Stopher, the number one quarterback of the brand new Cincinnati Bengals. The club figured to have problems enough, even with the sound Stopher. But now they face even more question marks than they figured on. With pro football putting more and more emphasis on the quarterback, plus the unusually large number of injured quarterbacks this year, the season coming up could provide some surprises. With the exception of Snead, the other members of the injured list all figure to be back in action fairly soon. But there is no guarantee that their injuries won't show up again. The quarterback is the number one man in every offense in pro football today. Defensive teams make no secret of their desire to get the quarterback out of there if possible. To lose a quarterback during a regular season game is serious, but understandable. But don't be too surprised if in the near future you find that the first-string quarterbacks are held out of the exhibition schedule to a great extent. When that happens, the coaches may relax, but the fans will really set up a howl. This is Joe Garagiola from Monitor Sports.
Monitor Sports with Joe Garagiola and other top reporters can be heard throughout the Monitor weekend.
And he wakes up in the morning with his head down in his eyes, and he says hi. And he stumbles to the breakfast table while the kids are going off to school goodbye. And he reaches out, takes my hand, squeezes it, says, how you feeling, hon? And I look across at smiling lips that warm my heart and sing my morning song. And if that's not love, then all I've got to say, God, to take the little green apples that fell in Indianapolis in the summertime. Disneyland and Mother Goose is my nursery rhyme. God didn't make the little green apples. It's not raining in Indianapolis in the summertime. When myself is feeling low, I think of that as space and gravity. Sometimes he calls me up at home, knowing I'm busy, and asks if I could get away and meet him to grab a bite to eat. And I drop what I'm doing and hurry down to meet him, and I'm always late. He sits waiting patiently. He smiles when he first sees me, 'cause he's made that way. And if that's not loving me, then all I've got to say, God didn't make the little gray apples. It don't snow in Minneapolis when the winter comes. No such thing as making happy dogs and all the needs can be begun.
Patty Page, Little Green Apples. Now hear this. Helping young people this summer, helping the President's Council on Youth Opportunity find roots in your neighborhood by creating jobs, teaching new skills, and providing recreation. Call your mayor's office and join those who are helping. Century. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Monitor goes everywhere you go. Around Martinsville, Virginia, we're heard on WMVA. I'm T.E.D. Steele.
Don't go away, there's more to come. More to interest everyone. Just stay tuned, we'll be back soon with
Of the days that led to World War I, as Channel 4 brings to the screen Barbara Tuchman's Pulitzer Prize-winning bestseller, The Guns of August. See the drama and pageantry of the days that shaped the world we live in today. Watch The Guns of August on the Sunday Film Festival tomorrow night at 11:30 on Channel 4. Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York.
Monitor 68, I'm Ted Steele, and here's an item for this election year. It was on this weekend, 48 years ago, that women were granted the constitutional right to vote. And one of the little-known circumstances of that event is that only 6 months previously, the same Congress had ratified a constitutional amendment which made it illegal to drink. See what can happen to a man when he's sober?
Silent slave, where let that be? And in your eyes of the pain I've never seen. If I had found the words, you might have stayed. But as I turned to speak, the music played. As lovers danced their way around the I sat and watched you walk towards the door. I heard a friend of yours suggest you stayed. And as you took his hand, the music played. Darkened room, something more than friends before. While I was hurting you by clinging to my pride, he had been waiting, and I drove him to your side. I couldn't say the things I should have said, refused to let my heart control my head. But I was made to see the price I paid. And as he held you close, the music played.
Roger Williams plays Impossible Dream. Each time they learned a new fact about him, like this story, which came from the man's village priest.
We got to know the priest very well, and we asked him, we said, tell us something about the different questions that he asks you and the lessons that you give him and so on. And he said, well, the other night he came down here and he said, Padre, I was listening on the radio and the television to this business about the cosmonauts, and I'm fascinated by that, but I don't understand why it is that they go in circles. And the priest suddenly realized that this kid, who is the idol of the land that sent Christopher Columbus down the blue seas to America, did not know that the earth was round. And he went into his study and he brought back a globe. And he gave it to him and he explained to him what the world is. And this kid in that study of the priest suddenly began to caress the globe. He was his own voyage of discovery. And there he was, in a sense, discovering all the oceans his own ancestors had discovered. He kept saying, phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal.
Phenomenal. The word is Spanish, but the meaning is universal, and it applies, too, to the man being talked about. El Cordobas, Spain's leading bullfighter, whose life has been filled with courage in and out of the ring. You'll hear about that life just this monitor music away from now. Cordobas went into the bull ring for the first time over the protests of his older sister. He could not explain his reasons or the forces that were driving him. All he could say to his sister was, "Tonight, I will be able to buy you a new home, or I will dress you in mourning." Now, those last seven words are the title of a new book about El Cordobas, written by Larry Collins and Dominic LaPierre, who achieved fame with their last book, Paris is Burning. Collins spoke about the new book, Or I Will Dress You in Mourning, to Monitor's Betty Grobley.
I think the easiest way to get into this book is perhaps to explain the title.
The book is about El Cordobas, who is the hero and, in a sense, the symbol of modern Spain.
Right now.
Right now. And we try to use his life as a vehicle to talk about what has been going on in Spain during the past 30 years and to trace out some of the parallels between his existence and the transformations in his country.
We should explain that he's the world's best-known, most famous bullfighter.
He really is today sort of the god of the bullring. He's the highest-paid matador who's ever gone into the corrida. And he has probably excited more passion and controversy than any man of this century is inside the now world of the bullfight. He was orphaned as a result of the Civil War, and he was brought up in really desperate, miserable poverty in the south of Spain by a 16-year-old sister. He was one of five orphan kids. And she did everything she could to stop him from becoming a bullfighter. She wanted him to go off and be a number one worker like their father had in the fields. And he would sneak off at night to fight him by bulls by moonlight in the breeding pastures near their village. And he'd come home cut up, and she'd pour raw alcohol into his wounds to make it hurt so he wouldn't go back. He'd steal oranges. He was beaten by the Guardia Civil. He refused to go to school. Finally, he took to the road, and he bummed his way around Spain. He was tossed in and out of half a dozen jails as a vagabond, as a petty crook. And finally, one day, he came back to this little village from which he'd been expelled as a hopeless, chronic juvenile delinquent. And he got his first chance to fight a bull in a suit of lights. And he came home.
Explain suit of lights.
The suit of lights is the bullfighter's costume. And it's a symbol, of course, of the bullring. And he changed for this fight in this one-room hovel in which they'd been brought up as children. And the sister, his name was Angelita, told us, you know, she'd taken a curtain and put it across the room. And she heard him laughing behind this curtain, and she said, I thought that they were supposed to be serious when they were getting ready to go to that bowling. And he was laughing, and if he couldn't be serious, he should have been doing what I was doing, which was being down on my knees praying for him. And he stepped out, and she saw him dressed in this suit, which really represented the defeat, the failure of everything she had set out to do in her own life, to stop her brother from going to the bowl. And she broke out into tears. And he embraced her, and he said, don't cry, Angelita. Tonight, either I'll buy you a house, or I'll dress you in mourning. That was in May. And in October of that year, he came one day to this hovel, and he said to her, come on, Angelita, come on, I'm going to take you someplace. And he took her to another part of the town, where she'd only gone to scrub floors for people. And he took her into a house. The electricity hadn't been turned on, and he lit a candle. And they went around from room to room. It had four rooms, which to her was a luxury that almost beyond conception. And it had running water, and it had the toilet. And she said, you know, I kept going from room to room, touching the walls, and saying, que grande, how big it is. And then he came back to the doorway, and he blew out his candle. He reached into his pocket, and he took out a set of keys. He gave them to her, and he said, there's the house I said I was going to buy for you.
Monitor's Betty Grobley will continue her conversation with author Larry Collins later this half hour. Singing golfer, take a message to Mary. This is Ted Steele with a message for all listeners. You're on the Monitor Beacon. The New York State Fair has something new this year. It's spotlighting recreation. What's so new about recreation? Ask any fisherman.
The streams and lakes stocked by our state are a new surprise every year, as the hikers and campers, the skiers and boating enthusiasts. They'll tell you New York State is great because it's always new, a year-round resort state with each season bringing in new sports, new recreation. See the many faces of New York State recreation at the State Fair, August 27th through Labor Day. Walk through hundreds of exhibits covering sports, hobbies, spare time activities, and conservation. The New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets invites you to enjoy the State Fair as your own recreation. There'll be thrilling competitions, races, free big-name entertainment. Visit one place and learn everything about recreation in our great New York State at the State Fair in Syracuse, August 27th through Labor Day.
Monitor New York, WNBC, New York.
Monitor 68. Ted Steele here, and more about the life and legend of El Cordobas, Spain's great bullfighter, after Sergio Mendez and Brazil 66.
Monitor's Betty Grobley more about the subject of his new book, Bullfighter El Cordobas.
He is how old now?
He's 72 years old now.
And is he still fighting bulls?
He still fights. He shouldn't. He should stop. He's gone on too long. He's under too many pressures. But he's a prisoner of the being that he's made for himself.
Now, when did you and Dominique Lapierre, the co-author of the book, when did you find out that he couldn't read or write?
We found out that, well, really, the first time we saw him, it was in February of 1965, and we had gone to to see him at his ranch just outside of Cordova. And that night, there are a bunch of kids sitting outside across the street from this big wrought iron gate that marks his ranch. And they're sitting around a little fire. And we stopped to talk to them, and we learned that they had been there for 3 days and nights living on grass and acorns. And the pathetic and the touching thing was that these kids were they wanted to become bullfighters, and they were wandering all over Spain, living off the land, really, trying to get a chance. These kids had taken a little shirt, and they'd written on it something in bad Spanish about, "We want to become bullfighters like you are, let us have a chance." And the gate opened, and out came Cordobés in his new XK Jaguar, and he was well-dressed. And the kids ran up, and they swarmed over the car, and they gave him the sign. They held it up to the headlight, and they gave it to him. He put it in the seat next to him, and he told them to go into the house and get something to eat. And he went off into the night. And we found out that he was going to keep a rendezvous that he keeps every night when he is home in Cordoba with a priest to whom he had said, "Padre, make a man out of me," because this guy who exposes his life to the horns of a bull didn't think that he was a man, didn't think that he could call himself a man until he could read and write. And that night, he couldn't read the words on that simple sign these kids had handed to him.
Well, Larry, if this great bullfighter, the greatest in the world today, cannot read and cannot write, what does he do with his time?
Now, you know, really, he has it all now. He has his jet planes, he has cars. A car to him has always been a symbol of wealth, and it's reassuring to him to be able to take his cars out and beat them up by driving over the old country roads around his ranch. He owns 3 or 4 ranches. He owns a hotel, and he has a penthouse suite in that hotel. And it looks down, it's in Cordoba, and it looks down on the place where he spent his first night in Cordoba, which is the city jail. But I think the most touching thing about all is, in a sense, his possessions and his wealth, is the very first thing that he bought. He told us when he was in that summer, after he had said to his sister, "Either I'll buy you a house or I'll dress you in mourning," he began to get bullfights in the province of Cordoba. And with his first money, he bought a great big dried mountain ham. And he said, "That ham was my friend," because there weren't enough days in the calendar to count all the days when my stomach had screamed out from hunger. And I had that ham with me, and as long as it was there, I could eat something. Any time, you see, it wasn't the fact of having something to eat. It was the fact that any time he was hungry, he could cut off a slice and eat it. And it meant he could never be hungry.
You can read about it in the book. It's titled, "Or I'll Dress You in Mourning," and it is about the world's greatest bullfighter, El Cordobés. And the book is by my guest, Larry Collins, co-authored with Dominique LaPierre. This is Betty Gregory for Monitor.
Monitor Music now, Karen Chandler.
I guess I'm walking out on you. It's been a long time overdue. So save the tears that stop the flow, and save the smile you seldom wear. For we have lost what we once had. Thinking what to say.
Your Mind, a title, incidentally, which suggests the possibilities at the upcoming Democratic convention. But whatever happens, NBC News will be there in Chicago beginning August 26th for quick, complete, and challenging coverage on both radio and TV. NBC News coming up. I'm your host, Ted Steele. And don't you go away, because
we still have more to bring you. Just the way I think. More news, more songs to sing you. More comedy. More NBC.
Your generous giving improves New York living. How? Well, when you and millions like you contribute annually to the Greater New York Fund, you help to support 425 essential hospital, health, and welfare agencies. This is a vital network of agencies which help the sick, the handicapped, the young, the old, and the troubled. This humane support has been going on for nearly 30 years, and every year the needs grow greater. When you are asked where you work, please try to give a little more to the Greater New York Fund. Thank you.
My name is Long John Neville, and I have a question for you. What's the shortest distance between two points of view? The answer, straight line. My early morning telephone show. So, if you have an opinion or question, call and add to the outgoing sound of the incoming calls on Straight Line, the Long John Neville telephone show, mornings. That's right, mornings from 5 to 6, right here on WNBC.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York.